You're listening to Ideal Practice, episode number 34. Today, y'all, I want to expand on something that we talked about last week. I'm going to call this an IP extra. Last week, I introduced you to the Enneagram as a whole, as a concept, with the help of my good friend, Elaine Bailey. Today, I'm going to share with you my personal Enneagram story, because when I finally got it, when I finally understood what my type was, it hit me really hard, and it helped me to grow. Just a quick note, if you too are interested in figuring out what your type is, don't start with those online quizzes that you can find everywhere, y'all. They're not actually that helpful. At the end of today's episode, I'll offer some ideas about what I think works better. We'll talk about that too. So, stay tuned. Hi, I'm Wendy Pitts Reeves, and with over two decades of experience in the private practice world, I've built my six-figure business while learning a lot of lessons the hard way. This is the first podcast that shows you how to apply the principles of energy, alignment, and strategy to build a practice that is profit-centered, but people-forward. This is the Ideal Practice Podcast. Hey guys, welcome back. This is Wendy. Thank you so much for tuning into yet another episode of the Ideal Practice Podcast. How are you doing? At the time that I'm recording this, we've got a really major winter storm that is hitting the northwest part of the country and is beginning to work its way across. I know that depending upon where you are, some of you may be facing some pretty serious snow hazards. I hope you're finding a way to stay safe and warm and dry, and that you've got a good candle or a fireplace and some hot apple cider wherever you are. Thinking about all of you who are dealing with that for sure. And I want to give a quick shout out to Carrie Omstutz, who actually is a friend of mine who lives in Minneapolis. So she is probably one of those that's got this coming her way, honestly. Carrie was kind enough to leave us a 5-star review after last week's episode, which I love, y'all. I love. And she said, in particular, how much she enjoyed my interview with Elaine Bailey. Well, if you missed that, do check it out. The episode today is going to make more sense if you've heard that first. So go back and listen to episode 33, where Elaine, who really is an outstanding business coach in her own right, walked us through a really nice overview of the Enneagram. Now, it takes a while to cover that. The Enneagram covers 9 personality types, and we wanted to give you, you know, a decent understanding of those as an introductory conversation. So that episode went a little long, but I told you even then that my own personal experience with this incredible tool has been a bit of a doozy for me personally, and I promised to tell you that story. And so I decided to go ahead and just jump right back into it and do that today. Now, before I dive into that, thinking about mindset and the way we approach our life, if you find yourself getting all twisted up about the money side of your practice, if you're tripping over what to charge, or you stumble sometimes when it's time to talk about a late payment with a particular client, or if you just feel guilty because you want to make more money, dang it, which, by the way, is really common among my people, then I just want to invite you to check out the little curse. Oh, that's really funny. I want you to check out the little course that I've created for you called Mind Over Money. I'll tell you a little bit more about that at the end of today's program. So just check that out at the end. I don't want to go into that right now, but I want you to know that I've got a little information for you about that at the end for those of you who might could use it. Now, let's get back to my story about the Enneagram. First of all, why do I want to tell you this? Because, you know, if you're trying to learn about the whole thing, then what does it matter about me personally? Well, part of the reason I wanted to share this with you is because there's a saying out there that when you finally figure out your type, if you hate it, you know you're on the right path. And there's a certain aspect to that. Even as we were walking through each of the 9 types last week, with Elaine, I found myself wanting to tell everybody, this is the hard part about it, and here is the good part about it. Because as is the case with anything like this. Y'all know this. If you've ever done Myers-Briggs or the DISC or the Colby A Index or any other personality, work styles, anything like that, you know that they are nothing but descriptions that just sort of describe a pattern or a tendency. It doesn't have to be good, bad, right, wrong. They're just, it's just patterns. And I don't want you to hate it. So when you start learning about yourself, depending upon where you find yourself on the Enneagram, it's really easy to go, oh my gosh, I'm one of those. For example, one of my best friends on the planet is an eight. Now, when you learn about it, the eights are often called the challengers. They are strong people. They are a force for good in the world. And when you've got a problem or you're up against something that's a real challenge, you want an eight in your corner. Trust me, they are really good to have on your side. But my friend, who is the eight, is often mortified when we tease her about that because we see that in her all the time. And what she hears is that the eights are often like the dominant force in the room. They speak with a certain kind of natural authority that is pretty impressive sometimes. And she doesn't want to be that. So she is often embarrassed by it. But it's nothing to be embarrassed by at all. It's something to be proud of and to embrace. And I would say that about all of the nine types. Okay? I say that now. I didn't feel like that in the beginning. I didn't feel like that when I was first learning about this. I certainly didn't feel that way about it when I was learning about myself. So I wanted to tell you about my own journey with this. I have had friends and colleagues who were into this for a long time. I knew nothing about it. I kind of blew it off when they talked about it. But I heard enough that I finally thought, I need to learn a little bit about this. So I went to a workshop. And at that very first workshop I went to, I could have sworn I was what's called a seven. Now, sevens are the adventurers. They are sometimes called the entertainer. They are enthusiasts. They love life. And when I heard the description of a seven, I thought, oh my gosh, that's me. I love adventure. I'm an optimist. I like trying new things. That's got to be me. And I was sort of proud. Like when I heard about all the different types, I'm like, oh, I'm so glad I'm not that one or that one or that one. I'm an adventurer. Well, there was so much about that I didn't get at the time. There are so many more layers to that than I understood back then. What I now know is that sevens use adventure or forward thinking to avoid the discomfort or pain of dealing with the present. And in particular, it's one of their main ways of coping with fear. So as where some people, some types, will avoid fear in certain ways or plan to cope with scary things in a certain way, sevens tend to rush headlong into fear. They're sort of counterphobic, if you want to say. And that can look really cool and kind of exciting, but it also can be detrimental at certain times. Like as with all these types, there's a good aspect to it and a not so good aspect, or a healthy and a not so healthy. But I didn't get any of that at the time. I was just really proud to think, I think I'm a seven. Well, over the next year, I had several conversations with friends of mine in a mastermind that I was in and with my coach that I was working with at the time. And she often told me that she thought that was wrong, that she thought I was, ready for it, a nine. A nine. Nines are the peacemakers, the mediators. I didn't want to be a peacemaker. So I argued with her. And I would say, that's not true. I don't think that's me at all. But one day, I did an intensive with her. It's called a VIP day. It's where you spend an entire day working either with one, like maybe it may be just you and your coach, or maybe you and one or two other people with your coach. I do this in my own practice. I do VIP days as well, where I work with someone intensely for an entire day just on their business. That's what this was. So I spent an entire day with her and it was intense. We covered a lot of ground. And it was a really deep and personal look at where I was in my practice at the time, what was working, what wasn't, where my habits were, where my patterns were getting in the way, and where I had room to expand and to grow. And I don't know what it was. To this day, I can't remember what she said. I remember her getting up and going to the whiteboard and sort of arguing with me. And she began to sketch something out and say, here's why I think you're a 9. And I don't remember what she said, but she said something that made me think, oh no, what if she's right? Oh my, huh. Something clicked. I was still arguing with her. I still wasn't convinced because the last thing I wanted to be was a mediator, a peacemaker. But I thought about it and I went home from that day. As you might expect, I was pretty tired. An entire day of thinking deeply about your business takes a lot of energy, which is why most people don't do it. But it's also really good for you. I went home that night and picked up a book that a friend of mine had that's called The Essential Enneagram. The Essential Enneagram by David Daniels, MD, and Virginia Price, PhD. Now, The Essential Enneagram, this is a little book. It's kind of like a Cliff Notes version. It's like the down and dirty, bare bones, what you need to know about each personality type. So at the end of this big, long, hard day, I looked up I looked up type 9, and I began to read about the mediator. And here are some of the things I saw. The mediators are, type 9s are adaptable, harmony-seeking, steadfast, comfortable. They are caring and inclusive and steady. Well, I like those words. But it also says that they were sometimes conflict-avoidant, resistant, stubborn, and indecisive. Stubborn? Those of you who know me, stop laughing right now. And as I kind of flipped through a couple of pages here, I've got this book in front of me. I picked it up today thinking about this, and I read that one of the principal characteristics of a 9 is that their attention is on others' agendas, requests, and demands, all the things in the environment that beckon. Their blind spots are their own position, their own importance, and their own priorities. They put their energy into being sensitive to others and trying to please them instead of themselves. They're all about making sure that life is comfortable and familiar. They want everybody to get along. They focus on harmony, structure, and routine to make life predictable. And they really work hard to contain anger. In other words, I don't want anybody to get upset. I'm going to make sure everybody's happy, make sure everybody's taken care of. And don't worry about me. I'm fine. I have to say that when I read that, I couldn't argue against it. Because in fact, one of the things that people have often said about me is how comfortable they feel with me. For years, I've had people say, this is probably something that many of you can relate to, because I think this often happens with healers in general, the kind of folks who are drawn to healing work. You're so easy to be with. You're so easy to talk to. Your energy is so soothing. It's so good to be here. I feel better when I come here. We hear that all the time, don't we? In all different kinds of ways. Well, I read that and I thought, well, heck, that's super interesting. Gonna have to give this some thought. And then I went off to bed, went to sleep. I was really tired. And I woke up about 3 o'clock in the morning, could not go back to sleep. I found myself thinking about that idea of everyone else's agendas and needs coming first, and that mine didn't really matter. And all of a sudden, one situation after another began to pop into my head. I thought about how I had seen clients on a holiday or at 7 o'clock in the morning or at 8 o'clock at night when I didn't really want to. I thought about when I had done sort of crisis-related phone calls that weren't actually a crisis that probably could have waited, even on the day of my grandmother's funeral. I thought about in my own practice, y'all, in my group counseling practice, how many times I had allowed things to, let's just say, slide in a way that weren't really the way I wanted things done. Or how I would go behind people and make sure things were okay and pick up the slack in 1,000 different ways. In fact, my people often said that they didn't have to worry about things because they knew I would take care of it if they didn't. And that's true. And to put it bluntly, you know what happened? I sat up in bed and I stared off into the dark and I thought, I did it here and here and here. I thought about how I'd done it in relationships with colleagues. I thought about how I'd done it with clients. I thought about how I had done it in personal relationships with family and with friends. How many times I made something okay that wasn't really. And I'm not talking something extreme, y'all. I have pretty healthy boundaries. I can say no and have lots of times. I do set boundaries. In fact, part of the reason that this was so upsetting to me was because at that point in my life, I felt like I had come a long way and I, quote, didn't put up with crap anymore, unquote. At the time I had this realization, I was in my mid to late 50s. And I really kind of thought I was past all that. I know who I am. I know what's important to me. I feel like I speak my mind. I feel like I know how to say what I really think in a situation. And yet I could suddenly see how many times I twisted myself into a pretzel to make something else okay, or to make somebody else happy, or to find some way to make something work. In fact, one of my pet phrases that I said all the time was, oh, don't worry, it'll be all right. We'll make it work. Yeah, it'll be fine. We'll make it work. Don't worry. No worries. We'll make it work. We'll figure it out. So think about that. We'll make it work. We'll figure it out. Don't worry. That's not a bad thing, is it? Actually, that's great. Like, isn't it nice to have that kind of attitude? We will figure it out. Yes, of course it is. Unless I was always figuring it out for everyone else and not figuring it out for myself. Unless I was acting like what everyone else needed mattered and what I needed didn't matter at all, which is exactly what nines do. And just in case you're a nine, it's what makes us good healers because we are very good at tuning into the needs of our clients. And I don't want to change that. Again, it's not good. It's not bad. It's a pattern. It's important to recognize when that pattern works for you and when it doesn't. Well, I'll tell you, it was so upsetting that night. I got nauseous. I literally got sick to my stomach. I had to get up, go to the kitchen, get some water, find something. I think I went and got some crackers. I really genuinely felt sick to my stomach because here I was thinking I kind of knew who I was and where I was, and I kind of didn't tolerate stuff anymore. And I could see suddenly glaring examples of how indeed my nine-ness was playing a role in virtually every aspect of my life. Well, that was hard, y'all. That was hard because I realized how often I was still giving away power when I didn't need to. And it wasn't because other people couldn't handle it if I did something different. It wasn't because I was being pressured. It wasn't because I had difficult people around me. I didn't. I have the best friends and colleagues in the world. It was my choice. It was my pattern. It was my type. But here's the cool thing. Today, ever since then, I mean, I hated it that night. I also hated the fact that my coach was right. I'm sure my clients never feel that way. I did hate it at the moment. But what I'll tell you since then is I have found it to be freeing because I went on from there to learn not only about what a nine really does and how that works, but also all the other types. I took a course from Elaine on the Enneagram and will probably take others. And as I began to dive deeper into the multiple layers of this tool, I could see so many ways that this plays out in our lives. And I'll tell you, being a peacemaker or a mediator is also quite handy. I actually had a mediation practice at one point. I did divorce mediation for a few years. I have always been really good at groups. I have led lots of large events. I ran a women's leadership conference for 10 years, 11 years, that had people coming from, you know, Kentucky, East Tennessee, North Carolina, North Georgia to learn about leadership. And I ran the team that put that conference on. I'm good at that kind of thing. I'm very good at that kind of thing. because I'm very good at consensus. I'm very good at pulling the good stuff out of everybody at the table. I'm very good at charting a course forward, taking all that into account. So again, it's great being a nine, and I have to watch it and make sure that I am treating myself as well as I treat everybody else. So this has made me a better therapist. It has made me a better business coach. It has made me a better wife and mom and friend. And I think it's made me a healthier human being, learning to understand the ins and the outs and the depths of what my particular type is. So even though I hated it at first, I have come to love it now. My wife and I often, she is a nine as well, and she will, this is the way this looks when you're in a relationship with a nine. Hey, you want to go out to eat tonight? Sure, that sounds great. Awesome. Where do you want to go? I don't know. Where do you want to go? I'm up for anything. What are you in the mood for? You know, I don't know. How about you? And then somebody's going to say, oh, quit being such a nine. Tell me what you want. That's what it's like. So I share this story with you because if you decide to dive into this a little bit, you may find that you're a one. And if you're a one, you're a perfectionist. And how often do we act like that's a bad thing? But if you're my bookkeeper or my lawyer or my tax guy, I want you to be a perfectionist. If you're my doctor, my surgeon, I want you to be a perfectionist. You may find that you're a two, that you're a nurturer, you're a natural born servant, that you, without even thinking about it, make life better for other people. Is that a good thing? Yeah, it's a good thing, as long as you're taking care of yourself. You may find that you are a three, that you're a performer, an achiever. And you may read about this and go, oh, I like that. And then you may read about the downside, and there is one, and go, oh no, is that me too? You may find that you're a four, that you're an individualist, that you go deep, that you feel things so strongly, that you're a bit of a unicorn and you're not like everybody else. And is that okay? You may find that you're a five, that you're an observer, that you aren't actually that interested in people. You're much more interested in ideas. And so what's wrong with that? You may find that you're a six, that you're very good at planning, having a plan B and C and D, and that you are loyal to the end, that you always know what to do because you think ahead in the way the rest of us don't. You may find that you're a seven, an adventurer who is always on to the next thing, or that you're an eight, a challenger who will always stand up for what's right. Every single one of those has a healthy side and a less healthy side. Every single one of those is a pattern that you can learn to understand, recognize, and be thoughtful and intentional about how it plays out in your life. So I hope you will do that and not get sick and not beat yourself up, but celebrate the fact that you're learning and understanding who you are. Now, I told you I was going to give you some ideas about how to figure this out for yourself. There are tons of little self quizzes online. I don't think those are very helpful. The first time I ever took one, it told me I was three different numbers. Don't do that. Instead, what I would recommend is go get the book, The Wisdom of the Enneagram. You might have it at your local library. I bet you can find it at a used bookstore. If not, of course, you can get it online, and I'll have a link to that below. In that book, The Wisdom of the Enneagram, on the front of the book, you will find a quiz that you can kind of work your way through that will start to narrow it down. It won't tell you exactly where you are, but it will narrow it down to a smaller area, maybe two types or three. Then go into the book and find the chapters that deal with those types. In the front of each of those chapters, there's an additional quiz that goes a little bit deeper. Try that and see if it rings true for you, and then go on and read the rest of it. You might also want to check out The Essential Enneagram, the book that I mentioned that hit me so hard. That's a really quick and dirty Cliff Notes version, but the first one's going to tell you a lot. So that's what I would recommend that you do first, and then just sort of live into it. Pay attention to what comes up for you in your day-to-day as you learn more about it. All right, that's what I've got for you today. I hope it's helpful. I have found this to be tremendously beneficial for me personally in all kinds of ways. So dive into it, see what you can learn, and let me know what you're finding out. All right? Have a great week, everybody, and I will see you next time. Bye now. What if you could stop worrying about getting enough clients, keeping enough clients, and getting paid by those clients? What if you could stop worrying about money much at all because you just knew that what you needed would always be there? Here's the thing, y'all. We all get stressed out, especially about money, and it's really easy to slip into a mindset that focuses on worry and lack. But the hard truth is, when that's where your mind is, self-sabotage isn't far behind. On the other hand, when you come back to center, tap into trust, and cultivate a mindset of abundance, it's amazing how things change. I swear, sometimes it feels like magic. This is a 31-day mindset reset where you'll get a daily dose of short lessons, sweet stories that offer positive energy and practice strategies. Each one takes less than 5 minutes and is designed to help you completely shift your relationship to money in your practice, and for that matter, in your life. Y'all, this is totally self-paced. There's no rush. You can read or listen to the lessons that fit what you need on any given day. And you get lifetime access to any future versions I may launch as well. That's why your one-time investment for Mind Over Money is forever. And it's only $197. What would it take for you to recoup that cost in your practice? One session? Maybe two? On the other hand, what would it be worth to you to feel better about money and to reconnect with that, you know, that inner sense of well-being that is your natural state? Personally, at the risk of sounding like a cliche, I kind of think that's priceless. So if you're tired of worrying, if you're ready to develop a lighter, loving relationship to money, go to WendyPittsReeves.com/mind. Again, that's WendyPittsReeves.com/mind. All you have to do is click on the button to register, make your payment, and you can get started right away. I'd love to see you there.